And this week I have the Ninkasi? How do you?
Directed by Sarah Kalangalo?
Kulshov. I don't know how to say this name. Mahershala Hazabaz. Hazbaz. Oh God, I messed it up.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hey, Ted, I want to welcome everybody to episode 35 of the Trailer Junkies podcast. How are you tonight?
Good. Welcome back. Hitting our stride here.
Yeah, we're back at it. I think we got our rusty nails out last week and... you know, we're back to doing what we do best, reviewing movie trailers and now drinking beer. And I don't know. So what's your beer tonight?
Actually, before we get into the beers, let's do my new little segment where we take a couple of movies and we'll give them a TGP quick hit.
Quick hit. Oh, before the beer.
Before the beers. Before we even do anything, we'll review a couple movie trailers.
Oh, man, this guy's hardcore.
First off, we chose The Kindergarten Teacher for you.
Well, wait a minute. How about we talk about what you're up to this week and everything before we get into that?
We'll do that after the two quick hits.
Oh, we'll do that after the two. Okay. The Kindergarten Teacher, directed by Sarah Kalangalo? How do you even pronounce
it? I don't know.
It's not a tumor.
I have some pronunciation later in the show.
Yeah, I'm familiar, but well, I saw that. But yeah, Sarah Kalangalo, and she won at the Sundance for Best Dramatic Director. You know, I mean, okay, it's timely, right? School year just started. My kid just started kindergarten and everything. But I mean, I don't know if this is about a kindergarten teacher. It's kind of about a little boy who has a gift of poetry. What do you?
Yeah.
You know, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's about that, but it's also about what society does with gifts.
Yeah, no, I get you. And then, you know, I have a couple comments. One is back in our Venom episode, which was, I think, episode 24, for those who are counting. I did mention at some point, we talked about Ken Robinson. He's a British, Sir Ken Robinson, by the way.
Yes.
He's a British educator consultant, and he talked about how school systems like kind of destroy creativity, and it kind of reminded me of that.
Truthfully, what happens is as children grow up, we start to educate them progressively from the waist up, and then we focus on their heads and slightly to one side. If you were to visit education as an alien and say, what's it for, public education, I think you'd have to conclude, if you look at the output, you know, who really succeeds by this? Who does everything they should? Who gets all the brownie points? You know, who are the winners? I think you'd have to conclude the whole purpose of public education throughout the world is to produce university professors.
Kids have these creative gifts, and then all of a sudden, you know, here comes the evil school system because they want to teach to the test or whatever they want to do, and all of a sudden, this kid can't find his calling in life to be, you know, this poet. And, you know, you're five. Is it his calling or his teacher's calling? I mean, like, is she living vicariously through him? Is she projecting her wishes and wants? And then when you think about it, the way the trailer depicts it, the sun hits her yellow house. It is almost like a sign from God. And all of a sudden, like, she kidnaps him and stalks him and all this stuff over, like, that one line. I mean, like, really? She's like a kidnapper. You know, I don't know. I'm not going to watch this one. It's just, you know, whatever. It just made me bizarre.
It took too far.
I'm with the dad. Let him play baseball. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree. I think it's an interesting space. You know, I think it's a nice, it's a small thriller. I would classify it as.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I think the, like, there's probably going to be some high speed chase, you know, and she's going to be, you know, like with Jimmy in the car, and then like she gets arrested at the end, and, you know, kid gets returned to the dad. And
well, even the kid knows, right? The kid kind of knows that he's been kidnapped, I think.
Yeah. There's that phone thing. He's like, help me.
So I think that's interesting. And I think it's interesting to have, you know, the perspective of a kidnapper that is like the kidnapper with a heart of gold.
Yeah, it's like an ethical dilemma I think she finds herself in, to say that, you know, she sees how and what the education system is. I mean, as kind of do I, and I think all educators kind of see the pitfalls. And I think any career or any job that someone's in, they see the pitfalls that that particular company or whatever it is has, you know, and no system is perfect. And I think she's trying to say, like, oh my God, this kid's never going to be able to be a good poet. I need to, like, steal him away to go make him be a good poet. And off we go. And I don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, the musical score is pretty remarkable, I think.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think it uses its typical trailer tropes. And I think it goes through the motions. And it really hinges on Maggie Gyllenhaal's performance.
Yeah, agreed.
And then the overall setup of the dilemma. And, you know, and by the end, you do, I think you're meant to see her as the kidnapper. And then she just took an idea too far, you know, like as a teacher, you're supposed to foster these minds, these children, and help them out. And yet she took this too far. She went against societal wishes, his parents' wishes, and even the kid's wishes, you know, to try to develop something that he didn't even care, you know, or it could also be not seen. You know, you don't put him on a stage in a poetry reading and it's just things that kids say, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is people find what they're good at and, you know, people find where they land in life and people become the things that they're meant to be. And school is like, you know, it's like a factory. You know, you go in one end, you go through the factory and the factory like spits out the same product on the other side, you know. And
well, I mean, that was the initial intention of the schooling system across all of the English colonies. So.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, and in the industrial age and agriculture and all this stuff, I mean, it's designed for a certain thing that we just kind of grasp and we keep holding on to. And then we do tweak it a little here and there. But like the overall design is just more or less the same. Like, you know, if you were Rip Van Winkle, you fell asleep. 100 years later, you wake up, you walk into a classroom, you know, you're going to be like, whoa, like everything out in society is completely different. Let me go into a classroom. It looks familiar, you know, and it is. I mean, it's the way we've been doing this for such a long time. But at the same time, like we send people to the moon on this system. And I mean, I think the more we try and tweak it, the more we kind of ruin it, you know, and I don't know, maybe, you know. And that's a loaded statement too. I mean, overall, like she's a kidnapper. She took an idea like, oh my God, the school system's going to ruin this kid. I know the best solution. I'm going to kidnap him and then I'm going to raise him. Well, she didn't think beyond like, you know, next week.
Right.
As if nobody's going to come looking for the kid and, you know, like, I don't know. It seems totally implausible.
Right.
Or it's plausible that somebody could kidnap a kid, but, you know, and then like, okay, so it's about a crazy woman, you know? I mean, I don't know. It is about a crazy woman.
It is, but the justification that she justifies to herself, I think that's where this movie has some interest.
Yeah, like she tries to say, you know, the person that's easiest to lie to is yourself, you know, and you can justify anything, the reason you need a new car or the reason you need to spend money on nonsense. You find justifications and you do that, you know, we all do that, you know, like we can manipulate ourselves into anything, you know, and I think she's just kind of doing that here.
Cool.
So, yeah. So let's move on so we can get to our beer.
Yeah, I'm thirsty as well, but I wanted to do my quick hit for this week. And my quick hit is Roma. That trailer just dropped 8/16.
Yeah, that was like yesterday.
Yeah, Thursday. So a week ago today, yesterday from our recording.
I know, it's this whole future to the past to the future thing that just screws me up constantly. I just go with what today is and I'm done.
So I saw this Roma, Alfonso Cuarón, and it's amazing. It's an amazing, it's black and white. It's everything we were talking about with the Be Kind Rewind folks last week, where it has no bumper trailer. It just gets into this story, and it's a teaser trailer, so it doesn't tell you too much. It does the same, very similar things to what The Favourite did last week, where it's just hitting you with this juxtaposition of all these different scenarios, all these setups for parts of the movie that you can't imagine are all in one movie. And it just builds, you know, it has the, you know, you talked about the score in the last one, the score in this one is right on top because there's very little dialogue at all. And what dialogue there is I think in Spanish. So I think it's meant to play in black and white. It's meant to play as score only. And it just is an amazingly old school trailer. And I loved it for everything that it had.
I would say, I do like black and white and monochrome and, you know, especially in photography and things. The one complaint I have, though, is it's almost like some of the black and white scenes mm-hmm. were too clean and crisp, you know, too high def. Uh-huh. Like when I see black and white, you know, sometimes you want to see grain. A little grain,
yeah.
A little artistic impression dropped in there. And when you see it super clean, it's almost like somebody just took a color image and they just like dropped out the color.
Desaturated. Yeah,
they desaturate and boom, you have black and white and stuff. And to me, it's like, in sometimes you see that even in photographs and everything. It's like it's just too clean.
Right.
But aside from that, though, you know, I know nothing about it. Like you said, it's a teaser trailer. When I saw the name Roma, I was thinking it was about gypsies. And because gypsies are Romas, you uh-huh. know, like the ones that you kind of encounter when you're in Paris or, you know, somewhere in Europe, Italy, and so on. And they're typically like a people without a home from like, I think they're from between Pakistan and India or something like that. That's like where their native land is. And they're like a people without a home, you know, without a country.
Yeah.
Which would be like the Basque in Spain. Well, Spain between France and Spain and the Pyrenees and so on. And, you know, there's people like this all around the world and everything. I mean, they don't have like their own country, you know, and however that happens, I mean, who the heck knows? But yeah, that's the first thing I thought when I saw Roma was it's going to be about gypsies. But I guess I don't know what it's about.
It could be. I mean, it still could be about that because they're in a car in the beginning and they're a car in the end and they're kind of going around. I think it is a, you know, it shows a richness of a tapestry kind of a thing. You know, I think it is going to take you places.
Now, it's a movie, though. It's not a series, right? Because sometimes with Netflix, it's hard to tell.
Right, exactly. And this is another thing. It's a Netflix trailer, but it says coming to theater, you know, coming soon to theaters.
Yeah, it was kind of weird in that regard, you know?
That's interesting to me because there's been a lot of buzz around the industry about Landmark Cinemas. I think both Amazon and Netflix are vying to buy the theater chain. So I think that's an interesting play. You know, Netflix is notorious for paying a lot of money for their talent, both behind the camera, in front of the camera, and all around their production. But imagine if, you know, Alfonso told them like, oh, I really want this to be in a theater. You know, we need to get out of the theater. So we get some Oscar buzz and they buy a theater chain to to put this out for him.
I don't know, man. We'll find out. But yeah, I don't know. We'll have to, I want to see another trailer before I make any judgments. I mean, it's too fresh.
Yes. And I agree with you about the black and white being a little too crisp and not, you know, and lacking some grain and it feels digital.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It feels digital. Like it doesn't feel true to what true to the nature of the art that they're trying to create.
Yeah. And I think they tried to compensate for that. I feel like they're bridging the line between black and white and sepia. I think they tried to warm up the image with a little sepia tone. So it doesn't go straight black and white. You know, it kind of has like the warmth of a sepia, but with the crispness of the image, you know, it kind of falls a little flat on that. But I am definitely interested in this and I hope it is in the theater and on Netflix at the same time.
Fits right in with our streaming.
All right. So thank you for doing the quick hits. And now
yeah.
On to some beers.
All right. What do you have tonight?
tonight. So I have the contest that we're doing. And if you can identify the beer that we had, that I had last week, which you'll have to listen to last week's and this week's, and then you DM me on Twitter with the two beers that I had for tonight and for last week, then I'll put all the people that DM me correctly over the course of the next week. I'll put them in a hopper and then we'll pick their name out in the following show of all the people that collected, that correctly chose the two beers that I've drank, and they will get a Star Wars Battlefront 2 game mailed to them if they're from the U.S. states only. So last week, you'll see what I did last week, and this week I have the Ninkasi? That's right. There you go. Can you see it?
Ninkasi Brewing Company.
Ninkasi. And this is from Oregon, and it's the Tricera Hops Double IPA.
Whoa, that sounds like a bold one. And bonus points if you know what time we were drinking on our episode 34.
All right. So I cracked it. Always a pint pour.
You want to pour more vigorous. There you go. Nice. Nice. What is that, a 22-ouncer?
It is another 22, another 8%, and I don't see IBU on here.
All right. Well, hey, while you're taking a sip
Tell me what you got.
I'll get into the one that I have tonight, and we can talk a little bit, and then you can tell me how the flavors are and everything. So
cool.
Some of the best beers I've ever had were in Belgium. I mean, they have amazing beer in Belgium. So North Coast Brewing, that's in Fort Bragg, California, they make a beer called Prankster, and it's a Belgian-style golden ale. You know, though it's Belgian, it's made here in the U.S. And it is in a Belgian bottle, 750 milliliters, which is like 25.4 for you metric non-files, I guess. And it's corked with a little cage. So let me unravel the cage here. It looks like, it doesn't really have IBUs, though I looked it up online. It says 20 IBUs, 7.6 ABV, and we have a cork. Let's see if I can get this.
Oh, that's there nice.
A nice pop. The one thing, too, when you look at beers in Europe, I'll let that settle for 1 second while I'm talking here. And one thing about beers in Europe is each beer has its own distinguishable design glass. So I don't have a Prankster glass, but I will drink it out of a Duvel tulip glass, which is a Belgian style golden ale. Very, it's like the same style. So I figure I'm not going to be like offending anybody.
I'm offended.
Yeah. But, well, okay. A Prankster and a Duvel. I mean, maybe Duvel's like shedding a tear, but you want to make sure that you drink out of the proper glass, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, here we go, and we'll get some of this action going. There's the proper pour too. I don't know if we can hear this here, but you kind of like pour it straight down the neck of the glass before it goes down my own neck. And you just, you like start pulling away so you get a good head. And then with the tulip glass, it like falls back in as you're about to drink, and it kind of like spills its way back. So you smell the hops and the bitters on the head as you're drinking, and you get that good fruity clean finish on the palate. So that's why these.
Do you get a mustache too? Let's see. Do you get a mustache over there?
Well, I don't know. Well, yeah, beer mustache. Let's see.
A little bit,
not too much. Yeah. Oh wow, that's really good. I, you know, this is one of my favorite beers. I get it local here, but yeah, it's fruity. A little bit bitter on the nose with the foam, you know, the head. But overall, it finishes really clean, and like there's almost no aftertaste. I mean, it's really incredible. So
what's the full name again?
Prankster, P-R-A-N-Q-S-T-E-R. And it's a Belgian style golden ale by North Coast Brewing, which is in Fort Bragg, California.
Awesome.
So how's yours taste?
Mine tastes properly. Hoppy. I found IBUs is 84. It has a very clean finish, like you said, the IPA. It's been warming here about half an hour. Just I think yours was, we both did that while we were,
sure,
while we were talking about our quick hits. And you know, I still like it cold. I am an American. So, and I think this is why I like
Serve at 50 degrees. That's where that's what this one says, 50 degrees. And I'm probably around there, but it's brilliant.
Yeah. I like the complexity of the IPAs, and I like, you know, just a chill, just a slight chill in them.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing, crisp, complex taste. I had earlier today at lunch, I had an I'm Peach, which is another IPA, just a little taster over at Whole Foods. And I was like, what's the IBUs on it? And she goes, oh, I think it's, 6.8. And I was like, I think that's the alcohol by volume. I don't think that's the high. And she didn't know what it was. And was like, there are people standing behind us in line actually wanting to buy beer with their lunch, you know, just tasting things for free. So I'll have to find out what that is.
And did you have like your pinky out on the glass and, you know, and swirl it? And
it was a very small glass. So yes, I had all my pinkies out.
I was like, even the more, all the more reason to have your pinky out on the glass, right? So really quick thing, you know, before we move on. So Clarissa said, Clarissa said, wow, that's a big bottle there. You're going to drink the whole thing? I said, well, what the hell else am I going to do with it? Of course I'm going to drink the whole thing. So anyway,
let me tell you this, because last week I had three. So to start the contest, I had three beers, and I was going to drink a beer on our, when we were guested on Be Kind Rewind, the other podcast last week.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I realized if you have three beers, and the first, and today when we were released, yesterday when we released, they would have known the two beers, and people could be able to guess the other beer. So we had dinner with Frank and Barbara on that Sunday in between our two podcasts. And I was like, all right, so I'm not going to give up a beer with the other podcast. I'll save it for ours next week. So I actually drank the Woot Stout with Frank and Barbara last week. And, you know, that's just drinking it with Frank. But Frank and I had the Woot Stout, which is Will Wheaton's beer, and it was an amazing stout. I think the best stout I've had. It's their 2018 Woot Stout. It's they make it every year. Will Wheaton's a coffee connoisseur. He goes beyond. He roasts his own coffee beans. He takes meticulous notes. He's a super nerd. I think you know him from Big Bang Theory, or did you know him from last
Star Trek?
From the next generation. Because I talked to Frank, and I'm like, Frank, do you know Will Wheaton? He goes, just from Big Bang Theory. So I guess he's crossed over all of the genres.
Yeah, and he's a home brewer. So I'm assuming he's
now he brews through Stone as well as home brewing. So he has his own label.
Exactly. Yeah, I was gonna say he's probably beyond that, but I when I first got into home brewing, 2010, 2011, he had a number of videos. Well, I should say a number. I mean, he probably had a half dozen videos on YouTube about like, hey, here I am brewing in like my buddy's backyard, and we're doing our thing, and they're drinking beers, and you know, that was like even before I got into Big Bang Theory, I think, you know.
Yeah.
But so cool. I like it.
Anything else going on fun this week for you?
Kids started kindergarten, so you don't do that every day. So I put some pictures on Instagram, you know, just a little man starting kindergarten, and then his brother's going to daycare without him now. And, you know, the kids at my school, I work at a high school, and they started too on the same day, you know, on the 15th.
Any early troublemakers? Not by name, of course, but,
you know, not really. I mean, there's always your, you know, you're going to have your problems and stuff. But I mean, all the kids are good. I mean, usually it's the adults that are the pain in the ass.
Sorry.
You know? Yeah. I mean, but, it's, you know, I always look forward to the beginning of the school year. I'm always hopeful, and I always look forward to, you know, just, you know, the kids are always great to work with and stuff, and it's what keeps me coming back. You know, I like it. So
awesome.
But like I said, I mean, sometimes the parents can be a pain, you know, but it is what it is. Like I had a parent saying, like, I don't understand, you know, my kid's a freshman and he's turning away from me and he likes to play video games now, and I think there's something wrong. And I was trying to say, like, nope, that's developmentally appropriate. He turns away from you in his adolescent years. Like, that's what we all do. And it's like, if we don't, then there's a problem, because then we're stuck in your basement forever.
Well, I always appreciate it whenever we come over and we're together, and Anne starts, you know, going down a laundry list of concerns, and you're always very thoughtful and listening. And you always, you know, were able to calm her down about any kind of concerns she has about Audrey and Bryce.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing is, you know, all parents have like, you know, 1, 2, 3 data points, right? So like you only know what your kid is, you know, but then I think of it in the terms of like, I have 1500 data points because I see all these kids and it's like when they're all the same and you're telling me your kid's like, oh, he likes video games. That's a problem. It's like, man, he's just like every other freshman.
There you go. You know? Awesome.
Anyway, how about you? Anything before we jump ahead and, you know, anything memorable that we need to record in stone
in here? Podcast foreverness? So I'm having a ball on Twitter. So I think I'm fully entrenched in the film Twitter sphere. And I was going to like give shout outs to my Twitter friends and close confidants, but I can't. There's too many of them and I would definitely leave somebody out. So just hi to everybody on Twitter and see you back there in an hour.
Perfect. And, you know, and I guess one thing too, let's give a shout out to all those wonderful people that left us reviews on iTunes.
Yes.
And Stitcher and stuff. So we've, over the past month, you know, we've however long we've taken off, and all of a sudden, wow, we have all these reviews. Like, I came back, I'm like, where did all these come from? So we're, you know, people must be enjoying the show. So even if we suck, please leave us a review. I mean, we just like to hear feedback. And, you know, seriously, though, even if we suck, like, let us know. I mean, it'll help us make the show better, you know? Maybe we go on too long about, like, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Or beers. No.
Yeah. Oh, hey, and so we were on the Be Kind and Rewind podcast last week. And our episode last week, both episodes, you mentioned Eisenstein.
Ah, yes.
Come on, just give me like the Reader's Digest version of Eisenstein. I want to know what the heck he is or who he is, whatever.
Okay, so here's my, I am drinking right now, so I don't have to drink for this mistake. But Eisenstein is the father of modern editing. He's a Russian filmmaker, film theorist, I guess, director, everything. But the test that I was referencing in both cases was, now I don't know how to say this guy's name, Kulzkov effect. And it basically was the juxtaposition of, you know, a man on a man looking, and then a woman on a sofa, and then back to the man. And then they ask the audience, what is the man doing? And they're like, he's lusting after the woman, you know? And then they showed the man, and they showed a plate of food, and they showed the man again, and they're like, what is the man doing? And they said, oh, he's hungry. And then they showed a man and they showed a gun or something like that. And they showed the man again and they're like, oh, he's angry. You know what I mean? And they showed his theory was that with editing, they hadn't mixed pictures like this before. They hadn't cut film yet. They just filmed things and then show them. So this is the first time that they were doing this. Now, Eisenstein was also one of the first people to do this, but the person who did this as a test on the audience was Kulzkov. I don't know how to say this name. But so that was the test, and all the images of all the man that were intercut with all those other things were all the same image. It was the same image before and the same image after. And it was really about understanding that your audience is going to imbue feelings and emotions and subtext into the characters on screen in how you put it together.
Yeah, I got you. So whatever's in the screen and whatever's on the image and everything is kind of what's juxtaposed against the guy. And then that's supposed to be your impression on what he might, or your, oh, I don't know, what would you call it? Like your impression of what he might be thinking, or like how you...
Yeah, your projection. So I think...
Yeah, you're projecting your emotion onto them then, right?
Yeah. And it is, I mean, it is the whole premise of filmmaking. And again, we talked about digital, but this is filmmaking where there was 25 frames a second in Europe. And, you know, here it's 24 frames a second in the United States.
Is that big of a deal, like 24, 25?
It's not that big a deal, but the big deal comes when you do the pull downs. So because they're working at 50 hertz in Europe instead of 60 hertz, as opposed to when you do a 25 to 50 pull down, it's 2 to 1. So it's even. So you always have...
What's a pull down?
It's where you do, so in television, there used to be 60 frames a second or 30 frames a second and 24 frames of film. So when you do that, every now and then you would get too many frames or too few frames and you had to take a frame out. So you lose part of the visual image when you do that pull down. But in a 2-to-1, it's very even. So you're always showing one frame for two beats of the kilohertz in Europe. But anyway, that the 25 frames a second is a visual trick that is played on your eye to mimic a motion. There is no motion in that. It is 25 still images being rapidly shown to your eye with a flickering light to make it look like it's a moving picture. So that is a trick unto itself. And then the editing on top of that is another trick. And you're
like a flip book.
Yeah. And your mind is always trying to make things make sense. So it's easier for mine to say, oh, that's a moving picture, or oh, this is what that person's thinking because we just saw this other image. So it is the beautiful flaw of the human mind that we're always trying to make sense out of the things that we see or hear. And this is another thing that cinematographers and all filmmakers play on.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. So cool. Because, you know, you were talking about then, I'm like, Eisenstein. And then so I...
And so
Googled it a little bit, and you know, I wasn't really sure. And then I thought, you know what, I'll just have TEDx.
And said the same thing.
That's funny. All right, man. How about we get to the Green Book?
Awesome.
Yeah. So it's based on a true story.
No, it's based on a true friendship.
Well, that's true. You know, and the thing that's awesome. No, but you're right about that. I mean, kind of jumping ahead a little bit. The awesome thing about the trailer was it starts off, they need a driver or, you know, well, the doctor who's not a doctor, right. But if you could, I tried to.
Okay. I'll do it.
Herschel or something.
No. That's
the short name.
Let's not do Herschel. Only. So his name is Mahershala Hazbaz. Oh God, I messed it up. Okay. Mahershal.
And his last name is Ali. Right. I got that one.
Okay. I'll let you say the last name. Mahershala Hazbaz. Okay. So I will give you my 3-word review for this. Right up front, and it is driving Mahershala Hazbaz Ali.
Not Daisy.
Not Miss Daisy. Not driving Miss Daisy.
Yeah, so the thing that I loved about it, though, was so he needs a driver to take him to the South to go play music for all these rich white people in the South.
Yeah.
And he gets, like, this gangster Italian guy, which kind of, you know, I felt a little hurt, you know, like... The racism was a little too close to home, making fun of Italians, you know? But as the story kind of went on, like, they really do, even in the trailer, as I mentioned time and again, one thing about a trailer that's awesome is that it can stand alone sometimes. And the cool thing about this particular trailer is that it starts off, they don't know each other from Adam.
Yep.
And by the end, like... You know, well, and the way they were talking, like, they're ball busting, yeah. Right? And they're throwing chicken wings out the window. And I mean, you know, and then he's like, hey, pick up your litter and whatever, you know. But you really saw the friendship develop over the 2.5-minute trailer.
Yeah. And it was a well-earned friendship. Like you said, it can stand on its own. It has a story. It has a pace. It has lyrical elements to it. It has musical elements to it.
Oh, I bet the soundtrack's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, this is another one of those movies that is driven by sound. I think, you know, this year's, I think all of this year's Oscars are going to have the huge, huge musical elements to them.
Yeah, I could agree.
But I think the cool thing to me is I joke about driving Miss Daisy, but it feels like it's from that era, and yet it's a reversal, you know, as we see gender swaps.
Right.
And racial swaps in movie making. This is another racial swap, but it doesn't feel like it. It doesn't look like it. It doesn't push as if it's doing something out of the ordinary. However, the themes that they're discussing, both directions, are themes that are still very, very alive today. I mean, the racial differences and the racial inequity and the racial, you know, tension of the time, it's there, it's on the surface. But I think the truer part, when you have Vigo talking about the rich versus the poor, I mean, to me, that's what struck home. And that's what the true story of this story is, you know, because he's a rich musician, he has turned a back on any of his roots in, you know, of poverty, you know, and I don't know that he came from poverty even, you know. out, but I know that, you know, Viggo feels like, you know, his character should know more about, like, his people, quote, in air quotes, of course, you know, not his people being black, but, you know, just an assumption that he comes from poverty.
The other part of that too is you see the stereotypes rein in, like, hey, here's some fried chicken. Yeah. Talk about, like, that stuff, like you said, on the surface, but then they kind of hold true. And I made a little bit of a joke about, like, yeah, the racism, making fun of Italians or whatever, but, like, it is kind of the gangster Italian that they put in as the driver.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of the sophisticated black guy who's the musician, who's a doctor, but he's like the doctor that doesn't help people, you know?
but it's also like a fact that you're saying, you've really painted me into a narrow place, and Viggo takes it as a compliment. He goes, yeah, I'm good, right? You know, like he doesn't even know when Doc is, like, putting him down.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that was, you saw that play out again too when they were talking about the letter that he was writing to his wife.
Oh yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and he was saying, like, oh yeah, my wife's like a house or whatever it was. And then he's like, no, we're not going to go there. Like, we're going to say it this way. So, you know, repeat after me. And he, like, writes down what he was saying, you know, which then helped him to craft a better letter to his wife that actually caused her to feel more in love with her husband, who wasn't there at the time, you know?
And it's so funny to think, like, maybe this is closer, you know, it's so funny to think that someone else can give you words to express the way that you're feeling more closely than you can even express them yourself.
Yeah. And I think the cool thing about it too is, I mean, it comes from a time when whites and blacks, like, they really couldn't be friends. And, you know, culturally, they couldn't be friends. But in some states, it was illegal to have these relationships.
Yeah.
And, you know, to come out of, I mean, I don't know, what's the time period? Like early 60s, maybe? I mean, by the Cars.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, in whatever the states they're going to, I mean, the North maybe was a little bit more open with regard to that. But the South was definitely, I mean, like, you know, whites and blacks couldn't have relationships, like, by law. Not just by, you know, de facto culture, you know what I mean? But and it's bizarre to even think about in today's world. But yeah, no, it looks really cool. And like I said, I mean, I think the soundtrack's going to be amazing. And as you mentioned, the Oscars this year are going to be a lot of musical scores. I mean, even, you know, we were talking about Bohemian Rhapsody, you know,
A
couple months ago.
Star is Born, you know.
Star is Born, yeah, another one that we talked about.
This might have some music to it.
Oh, I think this definitely will. I mean, it's about a musician, for crying out loud. You know?
I feel like I definitely want to see this. I'm seeing how, I'm feeling Anne out on how she likes it. I think she said to me when we were watching this trailer, she'll watch anything with Viggo in it.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Yeah, you know, and the funny thing is, like, I mean, in a perfect world, there's so many movies I would see in the movie theater. You know, you get those movie passes and stuff for whatever, you know.
Oh, but that's going away. You know, we actually do the AMC Premier Pass.
Well, they're losing money on it.
Right. Well, the movie passes, and I guess some of the theater chains were, but AMC has always had a Stubbs membership, and we did the Stubbs Premier membership, which is an annual thing. I forget how much we pay. We pay like $20 or $30. I forget what it is, but we get discounts for every $50 you spend. You get $10 off something, right? But also on Tuesdays we get $5 movies, so any one of us with the Stubbs card can buy $5 tickets. So I think for me that's the value. I think we're expanding our weekend into Tuesday, and we're going to tell Frank, and we're going to ask Frank and Barbara if they can watch the kids on a Tuesday night, and I think we're trying to see Mile 22 this week.
Yeah, and that was where we're kind of in trouble. Well, in trouble. But, you know, what do we do with the boys when we want to go see a movie that doesn't really revolve around children, you know? And, you know, we want to go see something like, I mean, The Green Book, for example. I mean, yeah, the boys would be, like, bored to death with something like that. So, you know, how do we go and we pay babysitters and we dump the kids off and we go to the movies? And even if it is $5, I mean, that still is like an $80 night,
yep.
You know, it's like you just go broke. And that's maybe why we get into our little shtick of, you know, we're going to
stream it,
streaming and everything. Yeah. But I mean, I definitely want to watch this. I think it would be like, I think it's going to be part comedy, definitely drama, awesome music, and all around just, you know, great acting. I mean, I think it's going to be a funny movie in some scenes, you know, and like in the comedy, you know, sometimes like if you look at something like Tag or Game Night, those are comedies that have like, you know, just the most ridiculous scenes for no other reason than they're just trying to drop a funny line, scene, whatever. But I think these are going to be like, they show Viggo and they hand him like, you know, he pulls some like hors d'oeuvre off a plate and he's like, oh my God, it's disgusting. Like, I can't do that. You know, like that's where the comedy is going to lie because we've all been there. You know, like you're like, I don't know what this is. Let me try it. And you're like, whatever. I mean,
yeah. And I feel like you're going to need some levity in between some of the heavier things that are going on or heavier things that are discussed. So I think the way that the trailer is paced is a nod to say that we're going to pace.
Agreed.
We're not going to hit you over the, this isn't going to be one of those movies that you have to like muster the energy to go watch, because we'll keep it light in parts and we'll hit you with some heavy stuff, but we'll give you a chance to recover, and then we'll hit you with some loving stuff, and then we'll give you a chance to recover. So it felt like it had a very even pace to it, but very interesting. You know, like it's always going to, you know, while you're watching it, you'll be taken places emotionally. And in the end, you'll realize, oh, even on the surface, even in a conscious way, it tried to share a message with me, which I think, you know, if you can hit somebody on every level where you're making them laugh, you're making them think, you know, and you're making them feel, I think that's a win in a very special way.
Most definitely. Yeah, as far as the Green Book, I think I covered what I needed and what I wanted to say. I mean, I definitely want to watch it. You know, I think I'm going to be watching it in my living room.
Yeah.
Because it's so hard to get away with the boys. You know, and one of the things...
You don't live across the street from your in-laws.
That's right. Good or bad, I don't know whether that is, but, you know. But, you know, it's funny, though, is I see, like, you know, friends and family who they have older kids and they're going to the movie theaters and, you know, whatever, Avengers come out and they take a picture in front of the sign, put on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I kind of laugh about that, you know, because it's like, you know, one day I'll go to the movie theater with my boys and we'll do our thing. And it's like everybody just goes. And then I'm going to be complaining like, oh, yeah, I couldn't afford to go because of babysitters. Now I can't afford to go because there's too many of us, you know. But anyway, with that, we're going to roll into Hunter Killer through Crimson Tide.
Roll Tide. So these drop on Thursday, and that's Throwback Thursday. So I thought it'd be neat to, you know, when it makes sense to throw an old trailer in here. I found the Crimson Tide trailer, and I remembered it very well, and it played really cool. And then I found, like, the Blu-ray trailer. So it's like the best high quality trailer. So make sure you check out our website for that. And it was just an amazing trailer that held up. And, you know, my wife's, we were watching that Green Book and said like something about, well, watch Viggo in anything. And I said, oh, so let's watch Crimson Tide. He's in that. And I think she had seen it.
Oh, is he really?
A long time ago. Yeah, he's in there. And see, you said the same thing. Anne was like, he's not in that movie. So then I played the trailer. And there he is in the trailer, and I know he's, you know,
wow. He's
the EXO's best friend, so I remember that. They played like some of the opening scenes together. You know, he's at Viggo's kid's birthday party, I think. So remembering that, finding this, it plays out in a very straightforward way, the trailer for Crimson Tide, and it plays on the Cold War aftermath, I guess. It's still kind of the Cold War under the ocean. And it's an amazing movie that I still watch to this day. And it's something that holds up over repeat viewings.
I would agree with that. I mean, I think the trailer itself is an amazing trailer. Where I take problem with it is, why is it that you have the voiceover guy telling you what's going to happen when this trailer is so strong? The trailer like really tells you what's going to happen. So I don't need the redundant voiceover to say, here's what's going to happen. And then the scene happens. That's exactly what he told you, which could stand on its own without voiceover. And you're just like, you know, it must have been just a holdover from that era, I guess, the voiceover.
Yeah, to me, I was happy that it felt like they held it off as long as they could. You know, the voiceover comes on in the middle. There wasn't an In the World, which I feel like, you know, was probably happening around this time. So,
oh, I'm sure
so
it was.
To hold it off till the middle and to have Gene Hackman talk to his men be the first thing that we hear, and to have that beautiful, beautiful score under there, and it has like the Russian undertones to the music. You know, it's almost like what is the Valkyrie, the
Flight of the Valkyrie.
As the air cab comes in. It's like, you know, it's
From Apocalypse Now.
To me, that the musical cues in this are just as strong as that. So. Between Gene Hackman, and the only thing I wish is that it was a Red Band trailer so we could hear Gene Hackman curse at Denzel Washington, because to me that's the most impactful, because we know, you know, that Gene Hackman has lost it when he curses at the XO in the movie, and it's just like they have to cut in right after he cursed at him, and it kind of loses some of its impact in the trailer.
But
there weren't Red Band trailers back in the day, and this is as best as they could do, and you could still hear a little crackle in Gene Hackman's voice as he's yelling at the XO. And, you know, and I think I would have tightened up, if I was recutting this trailer, I would have tightened up the back and forth at the end between Gene Hackman, you know, if you're wrong, God help us. And then it cuts to Denzel saying, if I'm wrong, we're at war, God help us all. I would have cut some of, there was a lot of breathing in between Denzel's lines, and I would have tightened that up.
Yeah. Okay. So Crimson Tide and Hunter Killer is like the new Cold War sub movie. Where does the Hunt for Red October fall?
Yes.
So, with these? I mean, because that's the Russian sub side of it. It's not the American sub side of it, but it's still like, you know, doing like you're in the Cold War. You're trying to avoid a mistake. Mm-hmm. You're underwater. You're like, the water has a blinding effect, of course.
Yeah.
So you don't know really what's going on. And, you know, I don't know, where does that one fall in?
Yeah, so Crimson Tide was first. Hunt for Red October was a couple years later, I think. And to me, I love Tom Clancy. I read a couple of his books as, you know, a young adolescent, and they're amazing. But I don't know whether it doesn't. Crimson Tide blows it out of the water.
Well, Crimson Tide was 95. Hunt for Red October is 90.
Oh, I thought it was not earlier. Okay, so Crimson Tide was after. But no, I like Crimson Tide better.
Okay, yeah. I mean, you know, I liked them both. The one thing I did like about Hunt for Red October was kind of like Das Boot, right?
I have that up here too.
Yeah, that's going back to World War II, of course, but... But what I liked about Hunt for Red October is they start off and they're speaking Russian, and then they kind of like transition to English the rest of the movie, which gives you the nod like, well, we're really still speaking Russian, but you could just understand this now, you know? And yeah, where Das Boot was a German movie that was just subtitled throughout, you know? Non-Cold War, of course. Still awesome movie.
Yes.
Yeah, another sub movie.
So the sub movie genre, as it was, those are the three movies. You know, those are the three big movie: Das Boot and Hunt for Red October and Crimson Tide.
And Crimson Tide.
Now,
right.
I am sad to say you're going to take my cinephile card and say that I didn't see Das Boot. Anne saw it. You saw it. I know it's on your wall of laser discs.
It is on my wall of laser discs. You're so right about that. You know?
But was that in a sub for the majority of the time?
Oh, yeah, it was. And you know, essentially what they did was, I think, you know, I mean, the last time I saw it was, you know, a decade ago, whatever. But I think the beginning was like in the sub. Well, I don't want to say factory. What would you call it? Like shipyard?
Oh, shipyard, yeah.
Yeah, the shipyard. And then they kind of leave port and they go off into the Atlantic. And as they're doing their combat and sinking ships, you know, they pop up in the middle of the night and they see the destruction that they've done with their torpedoes, ships burning, guys jumping off into the ocean, you know, more or less left for dead and drowning. Mm-hmm. Because where else are they going to go? Because their ship is gone and they're burning
and they jump in the water. And Rose won't let her let you have a part of that piece of wood that she's floating on.
You're talking about the Titanic. Yeah. Okay,
they
sure.
Could, they,
yeah, we're not going.
Okay, yeah.
No, this is an iceberg. I mean, that is an iceberg. This is a submarine.
I'm the king of the world!
No, but, and then, you know, and then you see the turmoil in, like, the captain for, like, oh, geez, what did I do? You know, like, I know I'm tasked with this duty to go and sink ships, and, you know, we're at war and all these things, but you could get the inner turmoil from the German sub captain is like, you know, this isn't what I like bargained for. I mean, yeah, I want to like sink ships, but I didn't realize like it didn't dawn on me that like human beings were suffering on these ships and so on.
The toll that
the emotional toll that he felt from the attacks on the other ships he was doing. I mean, oh, it was a great movie, you know. But you got to read subtitles if you're into that.
Oh, I'll read it if I have to. But I think at the time that's what turned me off.
Well, foreign movies are best left for foreigners.
Well, that's what brought me to The Hunter Killer. So I don't know if you're ready to transition over to Hunter Killer.
By all means, let's go.
But to me, Hunter Killer is a war movie. It's like a Olympus Has Fallen, hidden secret movie. It is not about a submarine. The fact that there's a submarine in it is...
No, you're right.
Is completely secondary to the whole overall plot of this trailer and seemingly the plot of the movie. You look at the marketing for it. You look at the poster for it. And in the poster, you can't even tell there's a submarine at all other than the tagline, Courage Runs Deep, you know what I mean? Other than saying Courage Runs Deep, you know, you could tell they're kind of standing on a boat of some kind, but there's no silhouette of a submarine or anything to give, you know. And then the story is about saving the Russian president. Now, I like the story.
With Navy SEALs attacking on land.
Yeah, it's all on land.
Yeah.
When you look at the poster again, it has Navy SEALs in the silhouette in the center of the Hunter Killer, the words. So
exactly.
So it's really, it's dry land. You know what I mean? It's more about dry land.
Well, I mean, it's a Cold War movie, you know, a Cold War movie that has going to have lots of explosions. You know, okay, here's what I predict. Lots of explosions, lots of CGI, and lots of oohs. You know, I mean, that's what the movie's going to be,
yes.
Right? Yeah, I mean, the other thing, it's going to have a bunch of Navy SEAL heroics, and then, you know, Hollywood's going to produce something where we win. I mean, that's just the way it goes. I mean, it's, you know... And I don't know. I think it's going to be a fun popcorn junk movie that you're going to go. And then at the end, it's going to be one of those things where like the audience is going to clap at the end. And then, you know, which I never really understood because like they don't hear you.
No one hears you know? Clap.
Yeah. And it's like, they're like, yeah, that was great. And they clap and they like, hoorah, you know? And it's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, it's a movie, you know?
You know, I went to see 12 Strong in at Warner Brothers. And we were doing a little tour of Warner Brothers. And when that ended, I felt like, you know, we all clapped, you know, because it's a war movie. But at least you're in a Warner Brothers screening room where you can at least kind of suspend disbelief that somebody that was, you know, part of the making of the movie is in the back, like hoping that they clap for you, you know?
Yeah, they hear you through the wall. Like
somebody's in their office saying, oh, I'm doing marketing for 12 Strong. Thank God they're clapping. So Hunter Killer, I don't know. It's Gerard Butler, Gary Oldman. They're both playing Americans. I guess they're kind of pulling off the American accent.
Kinda.
Common feels like a strong character throughout. But I don't know. Is there much beyond the story that we saw? Like you said, America's not going to lose in this competition. What are they going to lose, if anything?
Okay, the one thing I do want to say about the trailer is that I think that it's a good trailer because it's nonlinear. It shows you scenes from all kinds of different points. And when they show in the beginning that, oh my God, we got caught in like a gun battle or, you know, a shootout under the Arctic ice and we're in Russian waters. I mean, it may as well be Soviet, yeah. But, you know, we're in Russian waters and then they show that submarine like explode and you're like, it leads you to think it's an American sub that blew up, right?
Right.
But then later, and maybe it is, I don't even know. It might be like, America, because they even say like, oh, we lost to Tampa Bay or whatever, which one it was.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that's a real one, but they're like, hey, we lost it or something. And then like at the end, they show like the torpedoes hitting the ocean floor and, you know, disrupting all the silt. And then that sub just like flies out of the silt, you know?
Right.
And, you know, it's just like, oh, man, it's like it makes you want to go see it. I mean, it's definitely like, I don't know, entertainment bait.
I mean, literally, when I watched this, all it made me want to do was to go watch Crimson Tide again and maybe Hunt for Red October. I mean,
yeah,
I own both. Why not just rewatch those? You know, it feels like that's justice.
Well, those are submarine movies. This is mostly going to be land movie, right? No, but here's the other thing, though. So why is it like when you look at war movies or military movies or, you know, whatever, there's always like some profound speech of integrity, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, they lay that out so blatantly in this trailer, like, well, we rescued you because, you know, however they worded it, we rescued you because it was the right thing to do. And it's like, okay, sure. You know, I don't think they would be like, yeah, you know, we got the Russian president and you're going to have a speech because like, you have such integrity, like let's do the right things when nobody's looking, you know, like, and I don't know. I'm not saying people don't do those things, but it's like every movie has that, you know, it's a little annoying.
It is. And then to put it in the trail, you know, I understand maybe in the movie you have to have it, you have to go there, you have to complete the movement, you know, you have to fire Chekhov's gun. But in this, you don't have to do it. You can leave things open-ended in trailers. It's okay. You know, it's a little expected, you know, I think, yeah, maybe you don't know exactly who's going to make it out, but I guess just in your gut, you understand that the Americans are going to prevail.
So the show, Man in the High Castle, right?
Yeah.
Started watching it. I mean, I think season 3 is coming out pretty soon. I watched some previews of that. It's turning sci-fi on us. But
are you caught up?
Oh yeah. I mean, we're all done. Like,
did you like it? I loved it. I mean, I love that show.
I think it's great.
Yeah. No, I think it's phenomenal. And can I take a short aside here? That show, the way that they show the movies of the propaganda filmmaker,
yeah,
to me that is the whole linchpin of the whole series.
Oh, of course.
You know, the way they only show reaction shots of people watching this video. So you have to imagine it's the most amazing, impactful cinema that you can imagine, you know? So it completely leaves it to the mind of the audience, which I thought was amazing.
And the point I wanted to make with that in relation to this trailer is that, like you said, Hunter Killer, there's no other conclusion than the Americans prevail, right? Mm-hmm. Because if, you know, the American submarine, the U.S. Navy, I mean, the Russians win, you know, like word's going to get out like, F that movie, we're not going to see it. And there's going to be protests in the streets, right? And then you're going to have like, you know, Trump and his like, well, you heard his military parade got canceled.
Shocker.
I don't even want to go.
Yeah, let's not.
I don't
want to
go down that
we're
road,
not.
But anyway.
No, if you're a veteran. If you went down that road, that'd be a parade.
Yeah, there'd be a parade down that road, right? Well, as a veteran, I don't even want to go down that road. It just pisses me off. But anyway. But the thing about Man in the High Castle is when you start watching it, I don't care who you are, well, as an American, but you feel uneasy.
Yeah.
Because you're like, wait, this isn't the way it's supposed to be. You know, like,
episode
what do you
4
mean the Nazis.
Episode 4, the white guy gets pulled over by the cop and it starts raining ash.
I was just thinking, I was about to say that. And he's like, what's that? He goes, it's hospital.
It's Tuesday. It's Tuesday.
They're burning the
old people.
Infirmed or whatever.
They're burning,
you know?
All the
and you're
old
just
people
like, what?
And the infirmed.
Yeah, like, oh man, I know. And it's just so uneasy, right? And this movie cannot and will not go down that route.
And it won't go anywhere close to it. I mean,
not even close to it, right?
Even when the United States Navy is saving the Russian president's life, there's still, like you said, an altruistic, you know, USA saving face kind of move, that it doesn't, it doesn't make a difference. You know what I mean? Like, Hunt for October is about Russian on Russians. You know what I mean? And Crimson Tide is about Americans on Americans. And I think this movie, because it plays out so, you know, superficially, it's United States against Russians. And that's as deep as it goes. You know what I mean?
Okay, here's my prediction. You're going to go, whether it's at the theater or at home, doesn't matter.
Redbox.
You're going to sit down with the bottomless bucket of popcorn. Whether you make it, because I make it like from scratch, right? You know, you got like the pot and you put in the coconut oil and then you drop in like, you know, and I have like this huge stock pot I make it in and I make awesome popcorn. But
do you have to stir it? Do you stir it or do you have like a little special lid?
No, I'm a shaker I kind of shake it, you know? But then what you do, here's the key to popcorn for all those out there. Do not put a lid that seals. You want to make sure all steam. That water can escape. Yeah, all that steam can escape. And then you wind up with light, fluffy popcorn. I mean, it's great. But anyway, so you have the bottomless bucket of popcorn and you're just going to be chowing for like hour 48, whatever it is, 2 hours. I don't know how long this movie is. I didn't look, but you're going to be chowing the whole time. It's going to be like machine gun heaven and oohs, like I said, explosion, CGI. You're going to have like, you know, launching torpedoes out of launchers from land. I mean, it's going to be everything you saw. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah. Right?
As far as all that stuff. And you're just going to be like, you know, I mean, gunfire, gunplay, you know, fists, you know, rifle butts to the chin. I mean, it's going to be all
you
that
will be
stuff.
Blown away in every possible military aspect.
Oh, completely. Eating your popcorn. Movie's over. You're going to be like, damn, man, that was like amazing. And then you're just going to like head home or go to bed or whatever you're going to do. But like, it's not it, like you don't have to think. All you got to do is keep breathing and keep your eyes open.
And then a month later, somebody's going to say, what was this? What was Hunter Killer about? And you're going to be like, I don't know.
Dude, you're so right, man. But like, keep your eyes open and keep breathing. And like, you're just going to be like, okay, sure. Inundate me with your visuals. And we're just. And then I'm going home.
I'm gonna tell Anne if we go to see this in the theater, we gotta bring my CPAP because I will fall asleep in this one.
You think so? You'll fall asleep?
Yeah, you know, I think I need the intellectual stimulation to stay engaged.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get you, but like,
and it's not. I don't need a heightened intellectual stimulation. I think, you know, like Infinity War, Ant-Man. I think that is enough intellectual meat. To chew on there. I mean, Infinity War is not a cerebral movie to say anything of it.
Yeah.
But it had enough of a story and has enough of a thing to go on. I think I've fallen asleep twice through Olympus Has Fallen or whatever the other Gerard Butler movie is. London, I don't know, whatever those movies are. All of the Gerard Butler movies that have something falling down, I've fallen asleep in. And granted, it's situational, you know, but there is something about just pure action without any kind of story. Once my brain has caught on to the fact that we're not progressing, every scene isn't there to progress the plot and show something fun and give you some kind of action. And, you know, I have to be engaged in multiple levels for a film to work. I'm in the dark. You know what I mean? I have two kids. You know what I mean? It's going
to... I'm right there with you. No. You know, and the funny thing is, I think this is the true sign that we're done with this one, is that I feel like I've been stalling because I'm trying to think of what this movie reminds me of. And the best I can come up with is like Day After Tomorrow. You know, yeah. Like it's just going to be one of these like ridiculous, throw everything at me. It can never happen. I'm going to eat my popcorn and I'm just going to like, it's just, it is what it is.
Great. You know? So let's call it.
Yeah. So anyway, I take it you're not going to be seeing this.
I will be watching the inside of my eyelids when Ann and I see this, and hopefully we'll be watching on a Redbox or on streaming.
Yeah, no, oh, I'm right there with you.
But I do have a 3 review for it.
Okay, let's go.
Dry Land Lovers.
Dry land lubbers.
Because
I get it.
So dry land, my daughter's a swimmer, and that's what they call exercise for swimmers.
Well, it's
a double entendre. Dry land,
right, yeah.
And then land lubbers. Oh, so it's not a double entendre. It's a before and after if we're playing Wheel of Fortune. Before and after, where the first two words and then the middle word goes with the second phrase. So
yeah, I got you. Yeah. All right. Cool. So yeah. Anyway, we had a few good movies, but you know, you always got to throw in those like popcorn junk movies.
Of course.
You know, but I think the sticker tonight is the Green Book.
Green Book for sure.
Yeah, and then the Kindergarten Teacher. Meh. We'll see. You know, more like the Kidnapper. You know, and then what was it? Roma. Yeah, Roma.
So we'll wait. We're holding off judgment on Roma.
I think there's more there than meets the eye. So that's just
And last week we didn't do my three-word reviews. I had them, but I didn't.
Oh, I meant to ask you about that. Yeah.
So for Maniac, I said my three-word review for Maniac is True Black Mirror.
True Black Mirror.
So like Black Mirror.
Oh, yeah. Black Mirror.
True Detective.
Yeah. True Detective, so right.
The mixing of those genres.
Okay.
And then this is a kind of for the favorite. I called it My Wife's Favorite because she after she listened to that last week, she said, I gave you that trailer. I sent you that trailer. And I'm like, I know. It was really good. But I did something for the three-word review for you, Jimmy.
My Wife's Favorite. Yeah. I love that because
but I did something for the three-word review for you as well.
Okay.
If you look at my notes, I crossed out favorite and I spelled it the American way.
Oh, so the correct way.
The correct way. So it's My Wife's Favorite.
Oh, nice. I'll have to go take a look at that. I didn't see it, but
written in my notes. So,
oh, it's in your notes. Just in my notes. Not on the website.
I have to explain it to you, and then I have to like tell it to you because we're in a what is it? What are these? An oral? What are we? An oral medium?
Audio.
Audio medium.
I mean, you are an orator, but. That's funny though, man. The spelling. Oh, and then what the last thing though, I think before we get going is, you know, we made mention a few times, but nothing really official. So we drop every Thursday, and yesterday was August 16th, and we dropped on as guests on the Be Kind and Rewind podcast. So we discussed trailers and highs and lows and good trends and bad trends.
Trailer trends over the decades.
Yeah. And then we talked about our favorite trailers of all time kind of a thing. And I thought some of them were really good. I looked at, you know, some of them were a little bit older and I went back on YouTube and watched them as I listened to our episode or you know, the Be Kind and Rewind episode. And I watched them and man, I'll tell you though, some of those trailers are awesome.
Right. So,
yeah, it was like, you know, because there were like shout outs on Twitter that they were covering and everything on there and you know, that their listeners were covering.
Right.
And I went back and watched them and those are really good trailers those guys or gals or whatever put on there. So, you know, I suggest you go check out their podcast and we're on there too. And we have another guest spot coming up.
That's right.
With Things I Found Online. So
TIFO.
TIFO. There you go. TIFO.
The TIFO podcast. So yeah, we'll be with Wheezy next week. And I think they drop on Thursday or right around this time too. So this one will come out the same time that one will come out.
Yeah. So, you know, kind of cool and, you know, expanding out to different audiences and we'll see what we get. And you know, you guys check out their shows as well. So, you know, it's pretty exciting times in the podcast world.
Awesome.
So, all right, Ted, I don't know. What do you think, man? Are we done tonight?
I think we're done other than telling people to check us out on Twitter at TJunkies Podcast or online at, what is it? www.trailerjunkiespodcast.com. Where else?
Do you need to say the www anymore?
No, I don't think you have to.
Is that a thing?
I'm 22 ounces into this beer, so.
I'm 750 milliliters into this. Hey, I'm a prankster. No, but we're. I know. Can you tell us that we're having fun on this podcast? No, and then we're at Trailer Junkies Podcast. I don't even know. on Instagram. But, you know, here's the thing with Instagram. Okay, last thing I'm going to talk about, and then we'll get going. So I'm a photographer, and I do photography. And, you know, you could check out my stuff, Jim Van Kira, on Instagram and all this stuff. And really, it's my fault that we don't do more on Instagram.
Instagram's hard.
You know, I'm on it all. Like, you know how you're on Twitter all day long? I'm on Instagram all day long. But on my own, I'm not on Trailer Junkies, you know? And I'm on, like, I'm on all these bicycle things, though. That's the difference. Like, Instagram for me is bicycles, where Twitter for you is, like, movie trailers, you know? And you know, oh, man, I finally found a way to rope in bicycles to this episode.
Well, I watched that trailer for the bicycles you put in last week's episode, and that was amazing.
Oh, the trailer's great, isn't it? Yeah, I love how they do that.
So you're going to do a spinoff bicycle podcast, right?
No, what I'm doing is I'm hitting up all – I wouldn't mind, but I'm hitting up all the bicycle podcasts that are out there. There's not many. There's like, you know, five, but – and I may or may not be a guest on some of them.
Oh, let's do it. Yeah.
I've already talked to them. Some of them are on hiatus currently. Like, there's this one called Family Pedals. Cool podcast. I mean, check it out if you're into like family biking and everything. And you know, I definitely will plug her because, hey, I'm into family biking. Why not? And this is, 50% my show. So, hey. But no, seriously though. So like, I mean, it's, to me, I find it important. And, you know, we look at things like climate change and just, you know, like whatever, traffic. I mean, it's the whole thing, but yeah, bicycles are important. So, you know, not to get preachy, but you know, hey, but anyway, so trying to get another podcast, you know, maybe reaching out into other audiences that can bring us into, you know, cause everybody listens to movie trailers and my feeling is they just haven't found us yet. You know, unlike you people out there, kind people listening. Yeah. So, yeah. So, all right, Ted, what do you say?
All right. Have a good night.
Yeah. You too, man. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you. See you.
All right. Later. Bye.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.